Covering a lot of ground with James Fox and Tracy Torme tonight as we talk about their documentary film project, 701. We'll get into some various theories about extraterrestrials and UFOs and much more on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. George Norrie with you, James Fox, Tracy Torme. Tracy, let's get into some experiences you did have with Roddenberry, Carl Sagan, our dear friend, the late Ray Bradbury, about UFOs. What did they say to you?
Well, they all said basically the same thing to me, George. They were extremely anti-UFO, and that surprises a lot of people. Gene Roddenberry called me into his office one day and was very, very upset that he'd heard that I was working on what became Fire in the Sky, the Travis Walton story.
Right.
And, you know, went into a profanity-laced tirade about how it was all such nonsense and that these things are never seen by more than one person at a time. It's always some drunken farmer in Nebraska at 3 a.m. There's no physical evidence. They're never seen by pilots. They're never seen by astronomers. And amazingly enough, I went through the same experience with Carl Sagan and with Ray Bradbury. They basically all mirrored each other, and a lot of people are very surprised to hear that, especially that someone like Gene Roddenberry was so anti-UFO, but he really was.
All right, let's get into the various possibilities. I want to get both your reactions. First of all, with you, James, that these are demons. What do you think?
Ish, don't think so. I would have to give a definitive no on that one, but, you know.
Tell me why.
You know, it's such a vast universe. It has to be, and we're discovering new planets every single day, and it just has to be teeming with life. And, you know, I just had a conversation with Story Musgrave, who's actually going to participate in our movie, and I want the listeners to know that this is going to be not just focusing on old cases. We're reviewing evidence for new cases, recent cases, very credible cases from around the world. And if you don't mind me mentioning this quickly right now while we're on the topic, we've announced Larry Frangella, which is one of our benefactors, a very, very successful businessman from Philadelphia. He's offered $100,000 with my name on it for I'd say definitive evidence. It's difficult to say definitive evidence that UFOs are real, but very conclusive, solid evidence, whether it's photographic, whether it's you know, filmed or snapshot, or maybe a smoking government document, or maybe a piece from one of these alleged crash sites. And I've gotten the impression from him and a handful of other people that we're working with today that if any of the listeners out there that have that, they might clearly say, well, you know, it's worth a lot more than $100,000. We could raise more money than that. So I'm sure there's a tidbit of evidence out there just waiting for us. So any of your listeners have any leads on any of this, you could be $100,000 richer and maybe a lot more than that. But going back to the demons, they're not... It seems like they're more evasive than anything else. And, of course, I'm not addressing the alleged abduction issue. But for the structured crap that are whizzing around, it doesn't seem like they really necessarily, you know, want themselves known. It doesn't seem like they have a hostile attitude towards us. They generally, it's more evasive. I have a hard time with the demonic stuff.
All right, how about you, Tracy?
I kind of agree with that. I don't think there's much evidence to... back up demonic element to UFOs. But on the other hand, I'm sort of an agnostic on the subject in general, because I think their origin is wide open to almost any possibility. So I'll kind of contradict myself and say, you know, who's to say that something demonic is any more unlikely than something extraterrestrial?
All right, let's talk about the possibility that they're coming from other planetary systems, James.
Well, that's certainly the easiest to pigeonhole, right? It's the easiest solution for one to sit back and say, well, if it's not terrestrial, clearly it's interplanetary. We're being visited. I mean, there are people out there, researchers out there like Jacques Vallée, that it must, it possibly is much more complex than that. I'd like to be able to simply say, yes, it's you know, interplanetary, but gosh, like I keep going back to saying, I think it quite possibly really could be all of the above.
All right, how about you, Tracy?
George, I would lean towards the interplanetary. You know, I actually believe that ultimately we're going to find out that these things are coming to us from somewhere else in our universe. I think we will find that the universe is teeming with life, intelligent life. Eventually, people will look back and laugh at a time when we question whether we are alone in the universe. I think that's pretty absurd. So I think it is going to turn out to be interplanetary in nature, but I think right now the simple fact is that we just don't know.
If I had to guess out of all the explanations, I would probably, I'd say interplanetary for 300. But, you know, I can't emphasize enough I'd have to speculate on that. I can't have definitive proof on that. But it seems like the most likely scenario.
Dimensional, maybe. What about that? Dimensional.
Well, you know, that's gained a lot of popularity recently. I think, you know, they're called ultra-terrestrials instead of extraterrestrials. And as James mentioned, Jacques Vallée is one of the leading proponents, I think, of that. One of the things that leads people to believe that may be a possibility is that a lot of times UFOs just seem to wink out or disappear. They don't fly away. They're there, and then all of a sudden they're just not there. And so some people have theorized they're going back to the dimension that they came from, and that it's ultra-terrestrial or interdimensional.
And they've learned,
you know,
how
Tracy,
to travel.
It's very interesting because one of our executive producers, Tony Cataldo, funny enough, he had an amazing encounter with a UFO, and I guess you could go as far as to say that it was a close encounter of the second kind.
Wow.
Because it affected the plants down below in the vineyards of Napa Valley. You've heard this story from Tony, have you not, Tracy?
Yes, I have, yes.
Why don't you tell us, James?
Well, basically, I wish he was here to tell the story ourselves, but basically he was out on his back porch in Napa Valley. What was the actor he was with, Tracy?
Martin Landau.
Yeah, Martin Landau, exactly. Thank you. And I guess they were having a glass of wine on the back porch late in the evening, maybe midnight, 1 o'clock. And suddenly this very large craft sort of materialized. I'm not doing this story justice, but basically exactly that, just materialized right over the vineyards, massive. And when it took off, it had a wake of air in its path, and it shot out a beam ahead of it, and then it followed the beam. But he said that it actually, all the leaves in the vineyards were affected by this wave of air as this thing took off, but it just materialized in place. And I guess there was a very deep hum. But that's very interesting that, you know, suddenly that certainly could be one explanation, right?
Of course. Let's look at the book of Genesis when they talk about fallen angels. Could they have been describing some kind of extraterrestrial visitation?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, a lot of the ancient astronaut theorists have made those kind of connections. And there's certainly very much about those type of stories that seem like they could easily be transposed into some kind of an extraterrestrial encounter.
You agree with that, James?
Why not? I mean, why would it be a new phenomenon? I mean, you know, what's a million years in time and space? So 1,000 years ago, 500 years ago, you know, not being used to seeing something flying around, how would you describe it?
George, also, one thing we're saying in 701 is that one of the, although the whole subject is so mysterious and so hard to fathom, one thing that seems clear, whoever and whatever the source of UFOs are, they don't really want to be seen. They are very clandestine, and anything we seem to learn about them, we seem to learn in spite of them, not because of them. they, for whatever reason, are avoiding direct contact with, you know, the powers that be here on Earth. That is very clear if you look at the phenomena over the last 70 or 80 years. That's one of the things that we conclude in the movie. They are being very stealth-like and trying to keep their movements to themselves. That's one of the reasons I think that the mystery has been so unsolvable for such a long time.
What about this myth, I guess, that has been going on for so many years, that governments are in tandem and in cahoots with the ETs, that they're working side by side? I kind of find that hard to believe.
Well, I find that very, very hard to believe, because the secret would be leaking out in a million different ways that it's not. That's one of the reasons that I don't believe in a massive conspiracy. I believe if there is a conspiracy, it's very small. There's very few people actually involved, because I just think evidence of it, the secret would be so powerful that it would leak in a million different ways. That's my opinion.
Well, you know, I'd go as far as to say there were rumors for swirling around for decades about Eisenhower meeting with aliens and a treaty being signed, and yeah. You know, and I just for a long time I thought it was so absurd I wouldn't even, you know, look into it, but I saw where that basically stemmed from. The documentary that came out, I think, in the mid-70s, UFOs, Past, Present, or Future. And basically they had alluded to an event that happened or might have happened of a landing at Holman Air Force Base, where the entities get out and interact with the base commanders. Now, I actually, believe it or not, I don't think Tracy does, but I actually believe that that quite possibly happened, because I've spoken to enough people that either heard about the video, the film taping of a landing, or actually one person that I've talked to actually saw it, and that was Alan Sandler. And we interviewed Bob Emenegger, who was one of the writers on the project. And if you look at UFOs, Past, Present, or Future, you'll see that every word is carefully crafted, and that's what Bob Emenegger said, because they worked in conjunction with the United States Air Force and the Pentagon. They worked with Colonel Coleman, coincidentally, and a few others, and what? Primarily military.
Was it like a PR release?
Every single, I'm sorry?
Was it like a PR release?
Well, yeah, that's the thing is that Emenegger felt that it was exactly that. They were testing the waters to you know, priming the public, possibly, to see what the reaction would be for UFOs being real. And if you watch that film, you'll see it's all like Quintanilla, Colonel Friend, Colonel William Coleman. They present some really solid cases. They touch on the Socorro, New Mexico case. And then, out of the blue, they suddenly show illustrations and talk about an event that either may have already happened or maybe it's going to happen in the future, which is kind of odd. And then they go into this whole landing at Holman Air Force Base, you know, and every time I've talked to Colonel Coleman about it, because Colonel Coleman had to approve every single word that was put in that documentary. Those two producers were given unprecedented access to all these military bases, to NORAD, to Holloman, to Wright Pat, to the Pentagon. And Emenegger said to me in the interview, he said, well, gosh, you know, why could I have, you know, put that whole part in about it if it didn't happen? Because the Air Force combed through every word we put in that film, you know? So In a word, what I'm trying to say is that I believe it's possible that a UFO landed at Holman Air Force Base and that entities got out and met with the base commander. So that I could go as far as thinking that possibly might have happened.
David Jacobs.
In cahoots with world governments and treaties signed and meeting with the president,
no.
I got to see the evidence. And the only reason why I'm drawing this conclusion with the Holman Air Force Base case is because the more I look into it and the more research I do, the more I'm starting to believe that it actually happened. Keep in mind, Socorro, New Mexico, apparently right around the same time, it's just a stone's throw from Holman Air Force Base, and you've got a landed UFO and the occupants witnessed by Lonnie Zamora. So you've got this event at Holloman. Why not that? Why wouldn't that have been filmed? And why wouldn't have base commanders greeted whoever it was that landed?
David Jacobs, UFO researcher, believes that this is a very serious subject, and that whatever is going on is not being done for our benefit. What do you think of that, James?
Yeah, you know, we actually interviewed David Jacobs in our last round of interviews, along with a lot of other researchers, and he's clearly a very intelligent guy. I think he wrote his thesis paper on the 47 wave and the 52 capital stuff, which I really respect him on. And he himself admits that some of his research conclusions are a bit out there, but that's where the data is telling him. And so, you know, they believe that there's a hybridization going on. I haven't looked into it enough to make an educated decision on it, but it really sounds out there. But then again, the landing at Holloman sounded really out there to me too until I looked into it. So I'm not sure.
What do you think, Tracy? Good or bad?
I think that for the most part, the entities that are visiting us seem indifferent to us. They don't seem especially friendly or especially unfriendly, but I tend to lean in the David Jacobs direction. I think that the evidence, if you take abduction cases seriously, it's not a good thing for the human race. You know, people that are abducted are not asked their permission. They're not consulted. They're just taken whether they like it or not. And there's a little bit of an attitude of that we're the ants under a magnifying glass. And I don't really think that bodes very well for the human race. So I tend to be a bit sympathetic towards what David Jacobs is saying.
Let me ask you, while we're on the subject of abduction, the movie Fire in the Sky, which Tracy wrote, the ending of Travis Walton in the film was different than what actually happened.
Sure.
Can you talk about that? Because I just was actually, funny enough, Tracy, reading a little bit about that today on the internet, and it was saying you made a really funny expression about it wasn't an intentional abduction. It was more like he was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah, Travis Walton's case does not fit the average abduction case. It's more of a hit-and-run accident. I think that he was blasted by a beam of energy. He may have even been killed and taken off somewhere and put back together, which certainly disturbs him. He doesn't like hearing that. But it's not a classic abduction like the Bud Hopkins or David Jacobs abductions. And we did have to fictionalize part of the film for very complicated reasons that involved the studio. Of course, I would have liked to have done the real story closer to the truth, and I know that Travis feels that way as well.
Well, and as we all know, they passed lie detector tests, polygraph tests, when this happened.
Absolutely, yes.
You know, one of the things one of our executive producers had brought up recently with Tracy is that perhaps we should consider, you know, making that right and doing, because we're going to be doing very beautiful cinematic recreations with this. I mean, think of like the real-life Close Encounters with 701. And one of the options right now on the table that we're considering is making that story right and giving him what really happened according to Travis.
Well, you know the way Hollywood is too, James.
Tracy is Hollywood.
Tracy is Hollywood too.
George, I know that you've gotten to know Travis yourself,
and
I believe he's been a guest on your show a few times.
A couple times. I like him.
Oh, I like him, too. He's a very bright guy. He's a very honest guy. And he really suffered a lot from that case because he was ridiculed so widely and called a liar and all kinds of things worse than that. So I'm really kind of glad that he's really come a long way as a person, and he's sort of learned how to cope with the reality of what happened to him.
I think it scarred him, though, for a long, long time.
Oh, yes. Definitely.
You know, anyone who's had an encounter like that. I mean, look at Lonnie Zamora.
Well, that's a good point. We're going to come back with both you, James, Tracy. I want to get into your documentary now, 701, and see how you have laid it out. We'll be back. We'll take your phone calls, questions next hour with James Fox and Tracy Torme. When we come right back, more on their documentary, 701, on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. James Fox, Tracy Torme, 701, their film project. Now, these, of course, are the 701 cases that Project Blue Book just could not get answers to. Of those, James, how many were truly bizarre, different?
You know, it was so fascinating. I can't describe the feeling of sitting in the National Archives and getting the opportunity, with the little white gloves on, getting the opportunity to actually sift through. I wish I had a year there to actually sift through some of these cases. Of course, you can quickly determine whether or not it's going to be interesting. You look at whether it's identified or misidentified aircraft or whatever the category is, and you go to the unidentified ones, and some of them are truly, absolutely amazing. And the length the Air Force went to try and, you know, explain it away in conventional terms, and getting the opportunity to go through those cases, it's phenomenal. But the problem is there's 12,618 of them. And each one of those cases has hundreds of documents. I think there's close to 1 million pages from Project Blue Book files. Do you know how long that would take to sift through 1 million pages?
Too long.
So, point being is you've got the answer to a lot of your questions right there, but you got to know where to look, you know? You got to know where to look. And a lot of the times, if you don't know what you're doing, you're going to go to the archives, and they're going to send you to the microfiche rolls. And you're looking through microfiche. I mean, you know. So the fact that we got the original documents, some of which we got to post some for your viewers on your website, I was really excited that we did that.
Now the 701 cases that were out there today, if they were to investigate them with new technology, how many do you think would be wiped out, Tracy?
I think that's a very good question, and I think you could honestly say 100 or maybe 200 cases they might be able to find explanations for that they didn't in those days. But I still think at the crux of it, the great majority of the 701 cases are just completely unexplainable, whether it's today or 70 years ago.
You agree with that too, James?
Sorry. Quickly, because you know one of the things people have often asked me is, you know, how are you going to get a documentary feature film in the theaters? And that's one of the things that I fell short on with I Know What I Saw, and I tried my darndest. So it was a match made in heaven when Tracy approached me and said, hey, you know, I've got this idea. I thought, my God, this is what I've always wanted to do, and we're literally finishing each other's sentences. But I'd like. If you wouldn't mind, Tracy, just take a moment and just describe to the listeners out there on how this film is going to be, you know, different from the television documentaries and some of your ideas, because I think it's very, very interesting. And I think that any of the listeners out there that can, you know, either provide feedback or some of the more recent cases, it would be tremendously beneficial.
Well, George, you know, we agreed right off the bat, James and I, that there has been so much stuff done on television now. With the History Channel, the Sci-Fi Channel, et cetera, there have been so many UFO documentaries that we just wanted to really commit ourselves to not repeating what's already been done. So we're putting a high priority on trying to find cases that haven't been explored. I mean, a perfect example would be Roswell. As far as we are going right now, we are probably not going to be doing anything on Roswell. And not because it's not interesting. And Don Schmidt, one of the great pioneers of Roswell, is an associate producer on our project, and nobody knows more about it than he does. But it's just been done so much. And we're just being very, very careful to make this a very cinematic, make the recreations very big and wide-ranging, and trying to really, you know, get the feeling of a movie and not a TV documentary. That's very, very important to us.
You know, let's get into some more of these case studies, if we can, and then come up with some various conclusions.
Okay.
We touched on a little bit about time travel, that they may be coming back here. If they are, why are they? What are they trying to prove here?
It could simply be a future history lesson. Maybe the way that future societies learn about the past is to actually physically travel to the past and study what was going on during our time period. I mean, that sounds very science fiction-y and is very worthy of great science fiction, but who can say that it's not true? Again, you know, when it comes to the origins of this phenomena, anything goes. I mean, you mentioned demonology earlier. I mean, nobody can say that's not true. It's a mystery wrapped in a mystery. It's very strange. Now, I personally think one of the reasons that it remains so mysterious is because the technology involved is so vastly different than our technology. You know, we used to think these things were like rocket ships and they were slightly futuristic and they could go faster and turn better than our planes or our rockets, but otherwise we're dealing with something that we could cope with in 50 years or 100 years. But what if the technology involved is thousands of years ahead of us? I guess there was that famous quote that future technology would be indistinguishable from magic. I mean, I think there's a lot of truth to that. And I think that whatever is behind the UFO phenomena, again, is technologically vastly, vastly ahead of us. And it's one of the things that keeps it the mystery such a mystery.
You know, I gotta just add a caveat on that one, and that is, you know, maybe they're coming back in time to take matches out of the hands of a baby, because a lot of times, you know, you get these stories from military personnel of monitoring of rockets and Atlas rockets with nuclear tip, you know, missiles and that sort of thing, and that brings me back to something that's extremely, I'm very, very excited about. I don't even know if I've shared this with Tracy yet or not, and that is, there's a fascinating case that happened in 1994 in Rua, Zimbabwe, where roughly 62 school children from the ages of 8 to 12, very bright, articulate, little British accents, talked about or had all witnessed a landed UFO with two occupants. And one of the things I find amazing about it, first, children are just, there's something that you can't imagine. The children lying about this, and when you hear their testimony and hear their description of the craft and description of the creatures, it's just arresting. It's just so profound. And Dr. Mack from Harvard, a psychiatrist, went over to Rua, Zimbabwe with a video camera crew and documented some of these cases, some of these witnesses, a lot of the witnesses, actually.
Right. He
and
was
a lot of the children said that there was a message to them, telepathically communicated into these children's heads, of us being better stewards of the environment and not to get too advanced technologically and just, you know, being better stewards, I think, of the environment is the basic message that these creatures allegedly, reportedly communicated to these children. Fascinating case. And tonight, since 2007, I have been, I wouldn't say harassing, but certainly trying very hard to get Randy Nicholson, who's now in possession of a lot of those interviews that Dr. John Mack, we all know that Dr. John Mack was struck by a taxi cab in London and died. And the video footage of these amazing interviews with these school children was left in the hands of Randy Nicholson. And he has just agreed as of 2 hours ago to feature interviews with some of the witnesses, as well as some of the footage that Dr. John Mack shot back in 1994 from Rua, Zimbabwe. So I'm very excited about
that.
John
Mack is missed, let me tell you, James.
If any of your listeners out there haven't heard about the case, Rua, Zimbabwe, 1994 UFO, look it up. There are some clips on YouTube, just a couple clips there that you can check out. It's just absolutely one of the most fascinating cases. And I know that Steven Spielberg has been, he's been very interested in that case as well. So maybe the fact that we're covering it might we get some participation from him as well. So we'll see.
How come we don't hear the kinds of cases we used to hear years ago? I mean, I remember when journalist Frank Edwards was writing stories about UFOs in his books. We heard about very strange things with occupants and stuff. We don't hear that anymore, James.
Well, you know, I think that we hear too much of it. I think that the YouTube is riddled with new UFO cases. I mean, just look up UFO cases in 2011 and 2012. The unfortunate thing about it is that the video technology and software to manipulate things has gotten so accessible to so many people that a lot of it's just bogus. So you have to sift through all that stuff to determine the authenticity of a sighting. There's thousands of sightings reported on YouTube and filmed on YouTube and all the time. But, you know, you really need to go and sift through that stuff and find the 0.0001% of really good cases. I mean, right?
Well, you need to. There's no
doubt. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, I think that, that cases clearly are still happening, but there's so many of them reported on YouTube, and there's so many hoaxers out there that it's rather unfortunate because it makes work for, you know, people like myself and other researchers rather tricky because, you know, you have a lot of stuff to sift through.
When does this documentary get finished? What's the latest with it?
We have a very exciting second round of interviews that are occurring in early October in Hollywood near Tracy's house, actually. And that will be the pretty much, what do you say, Tracy? I'd say primarily most of the researchers and big targets would have been documented at that point, at which we're going to start doing the recreations, and we're continuously looking for, you know, a very modern, recent case with good, solid evidence. I keep going back to that, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate the opportunity to make this announcement on your show, but if anyone out there has any leads on good cases with good evidence, you could be at least $100,000 richer. Please contact us. The money is real. It's there. I can vouch for it. And contact us through our website at 701 or go to Coast to Coast and click on the link.
To get that money, James, what do they really have to do here?
Provide us with a good photograph, perhaps a good government smoking gun document, maybe a piece of something. Maybe some video footage. I'm particularly interested in any film footage or photographic evidence that took place at White Sands, New Mexico, Holloman Air Force Base, Vandenberg Air Force Base, missile launching there. But I'm also interested in civilian stuff, too. If people have some good civilian videos or photographic evidence, we're interested in that. You know, try if at all possible. I know people send us stuff all the time that we have to sift through, but you know, clearly we want, you know, points, at least points of reference, you know, in focus, and an object, not just a blur of light, but a craft of some sort would be preferable. You know, think of like the equivalent of, you know, Santa Ana 1966, the Rex Heflin, modern day version of those Polaroids, or maybe a modern day version of the 1950 McMinnville, Oregon case. Something that of that equivalent today would be worth a lot to us.
Scientists and journalists, are they contributing to the plus side of UFO reporting or the negative?
Oh, no question, the negative. Nice. Scientists and journalists are the biggest culprits in the misinformation that's put out about this subject. They have just traditionally seen it the wrong way, to be really honest with you, to be candid. And, you know, it's really a shame that the Mike Wallaces of the world haven't really latched on to this subject and taken it more seriously. When UFOs are reported on the news now, there's always the obligatory comment about the little green men, and there's always that ridicule factor. And I think
I think it's gotten better. I think it's gotten better since, you know, some of the more recent films, since Leslie Kane's book, since the some of the events at the National Press Club, the citizen hearing. I mean, there's been a lot of pretty credible, you know, people and documentaries that are being made and that have come forward in recent years. And it seems to me like that's gotten better. I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, I can remember the first time I went on, that incredulous look that the reporter gave me, that little smirk on their face, and they just wanted to kind of, it seems like it's gotten better.
I honestly think that scientists and journalists have totally missed the boat on this subject.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's, yeah.
I think the smirk is still there, James, on their faces.
Yeah, it's still there, but it's gotten better. I mean, I give you an example. I you know, I was with Larry King just, well, I guess going back to Larry King, we kind of lost Larry King.
But we lost him.
But But, you know, I mean, Anderson Cooper was seemed to be quite open to it. You know, he was, you know, he invited us.
I would think he would put it in that little funny reel of his when he does.
Yeah, well, yeah. But I do think it's getting better. I really do. It's certainly getting better behind the scenes, because a lot of times you talk to these reporters or you talk to, like, scientists, and publicly they're reluctant to, you know, even express an interest in the subject. And behind closed doors, they're like, wow, God, I want to see more. Can you send me a copy of your film? So I know it's still there, but I honestly believe that it's getting better. And, you know, the release of all the documents in England, the release of the documents in France, there seem to be more credible people coming forward. I'm optimistic. I really am. And I'm extremely optimistic with this film project that we're working on with Tracy right now and the other team members, that we're really going to put this matter to rest once and for all. I feel quite confident about that. I really do.
Well, when you say put it to rest once and for all, what do you mean?
Establish the fact that they're real. The phenomenon is real. Doesn't necessarily have to come up with conclusions as to where they come from, but there are structured craft of unknown origin whizzing around with impunity and have been doing so for at least 60, 70 years and possibly for thousands of years.
Lex, our webmaster, wanted to know, with Photoshop and everything these days, what kind of procedure are you going to do so you don't give out $100,000 to somebody who doesn't deserve it?
We're bringing on board some of the best special effects guys out there. And obviously, you know, if a photograph is backed up by multiple eyewitness testimony, that's even better. But it's going to be subjected to the most rigorous, you know, scrutiny that we can, scientific scrutiny that we can get, we can do. Obviously, could we determine 100% that it's authentic? We're going to do our darndest to make sure. Believe me, we will. But it's hard to say definitively. That's why the official evidence is of particular interest. Certainly, you know, military stuff coming in, and certainly military coming in from, you know, 50s, 60s, possibly 70s. Would be of extreme interest to us.
So
like
old
I said,
cases
if anybody out there sitting on some film strips that was taken to White Sands or Holman Air Force Base, $100,000 seems rather low for the risk that they're taking. But I promise you that I can get more than that if you guys want to contact us and we can meet in person and all that fun stuff.
Out of your own personal bank account, too.
I wouldn't go that far. No, I can assure you I've met with people in a position to have that kind of money. And they said if it's the right footage, we can generate more.
So they won't back out on you?
No. I went to their house. I met with them. I'm friends with them.
You know where they live, right?
I know where they live. I wouldn't put my name on it if I didn't believe them. I really
don't. Don't cross James Fox. Lee Spiegel, good writer, was just with him last weekend in Denver taping some TV shows. He's been very supportive of this show and the field of UFOs. And he's one of the few good writers out there doing this.
Yes, Lee Spiegel's been fantastic. And, yeah, he actually made the announcement of the $100,000 reward. I love what he did with the United Nations back in the 70s. And yeah. I love what he's doing today. I mean, he's one of the best journalists on the subject out there.
We're going to come back and take phone calls with both of you, maybe a whistleblower as well. We'll be back.